Welcome back, Deep Thoughts listeners. We're out of jail now. So I've been thinking about, you know, which episodes would be interesting to listen to in the last 5 years. Of course, we'll go into bonus mode after that. So we have some critical blank theory things going around the world. So I thought we might create our own critical thought theory episode. Because isn't that the game that needs to be played right now? Getting people to think critically about things. But the question is like, what is that? What is critical thought? Well, there's a lot of definitions out there that are very clinical and smart sounding. But I'm going to give you what I think is the most basic fundamental definition of critical thought theory. It's the moment you come up with a deduction of your own. Meaning, instead of absorbing sources, any other source, you know their names. You're trying to have a thought, maybe answer a question, come up with something creative, deduce something out of a bunch of facts that you have. You take a pass at it immediately. And let's just say, for the sake of defining this definitively, it doesn't come to you right away. Now, we know this happens. It does come to you right away sometimes, right? In this particular case, it doesn't. Instead of reaching out into the universe to find some information in some pre-written, pre-digested, pre-crafted, you take another look. And you keep taking looks at that data until you can figure out a solution. But there's also another process to it if you're not coming up with that solution. Well, you have X number of data points. Meaning, your car didn't start today. So you pop the hood. You look at all the stuff. And you're trying to remember in your head, what did it look like last time I opened the hood when the engine was running? That's the first thing you do. Well, is there a hose coming off here? Like, is there something that looks broken? Is there a big splatter of grease somewhere where there wasn't grease? Is there a burn mark somewhere where the electrical is? Let me run it again. You know, and you listen. Get your friend in there to turn the key. You know, hopefully something's clinking and clacking and you can figure something out. Then you do some exploration. What are you doing exploration for? Because you need more data points to come up with the solution. You are trying to really learn how this thing works. And that could be anything in the entire world. From why are you feeling a particular way? What are the elements that are computing into your mind when you feel a certain way? So those are the questions. Those are the things we try to answer, right? So once you understand that basic definition, now I want you to rewind, depending on your age. I'm going to say probably 50 and above is where you have a clean age where this, you have memories of this being the case. Older the better. Well, you had libraries sometimes that you could get access to, but a library was a process, right? You have to physically get up, find a library, get yourself a library card, go in there, use the Dewey Decimal System, find a book, then find a good book. Maybe ask the librarian for recommendations. Read chapter and verse. You're going to get maybe partial data. If you're answering a question that's never been answered before, well, then you've got to deduce something new. So you're getting more data, but you're never going to find your answer. Today, what do? Get on your phone. Go to your favorite search engine. Type in the problem. Well, 9 times out of 10, there's a billion answers for it. All right, so you just suck down whatever sounds good. And, you know, I will say, in a traditional sense where you are trying to learn something that has already been established as in a mathematical certainty, I always use chemistry because if the recipes of chemistry didn't work, then you wouldn't be able to get the reactions that you're looking for. And so you would know they were lying. So it's a nice place to just find that's what it is. Mathematics, you know, you just add some numbers on a calculator and it's probably, unless the calculator is broken, it's the number that you're looking at. So for those things, you can get decent answers. But if there's something like, you know, what is gravity? You're going to get a bad answer. but it came to you so quickly, and it is surrounded by so much other thought processes and maybe even things that are also correct. But that one little definition uses the word phenomenon. So you swallow that pill. Now imagine you've got a world where the more you ingest this stuff, you memorize and repeat it like a Jeopardy contestant, like I always say, you get rewards. You get degrees. You can get jobs. Maybe you know what's going on and maybe you don't. And again, like I always say on the show, especially my stupid science episode, they can define things that actually mathematically will, or I should say experimentally work in real life, but the cause and effect as to why it is occurring is completely and utterly wrong. But it still does it what you think it's going to do in the end. There used to be like these little machines that were kind of jokes. You put something in the top, it's like a function box, and something else pops out the bottom. It's kind of like when you use one of those machines at the grocery store when you were a kid. You put the quarter in and then it spits out this ball and it has a little toy in it. And it could be a million different toys. All right. Well, actually how that's occurring inside the machine, well, we know how it does it when you're an adult. Bit of a mystery when you're a kid. But you'd kind of typically get it. But we know technically what they showed you at the top of the box and what you get out of the bottom could be totally disconnected. One could just be for show, and one could be what you're actually getting, some other feed from some other location. So in my travels, especially in Los Angeles, and watching my friends do various film things, there's nothing like watching a director direct in a dynamic environment. A really good director. And my buddy Richard Taylor and I worked on a GoPro 360 virtual reality shoot for The Invisible Man in Los Angeles in this warehouse, and it was hot as hell outside in the warehouse. It was super duper hot. And so it was a GoPro 360 setup, and that means that it was filming 360 all the way around, and the head of The Invisible Man was you. And all of these anomalies we ran into when shooting VR, because you can't hide a crew behind the camera. The crew has got a whole nother set behind you, because that's the odyssey of the experience, right? We had to light the room, but no one could see the lights. We had to light the room, but no one can see wires that are not a part of this sort of scientific laboratory. The director has to watch what's being directed so he can make critiques for different takes. Well, how does it typically work? We got a big fat camera and monitors in the other room. Well, GoPro didn't have any broadcast monitor capability. It's just a GoPro, man. Bunch of them together. So we had to make the director, well, put it this way before I say this. We had to solve a ton of problems on the fly, because we just didn't know. And we were being brought in as consultants to handle the final editing and a bunch of other stuff. And they wanted him as a kind of a, he's an OG director. So the young director from China, he was technically a director, but he's like, he really loved Richard. And he's like, hey man, I want you to, let me have it. Let me know what's right or wrong. And then a cinematographer that shows up, and this kid was not vested in the project whatsoever. He was just lost, man. And he didn't seem to care. It was a weird thing. So we had the first day of setup, and this is all costing money. Renting this warehouse is costing money. The guy that owned the warehouse was kind of cranky because this is also where he lived. And so we had to tear down enough that he could sleep at night. Plus just leaving stuff out is dumb, because he might have a friend over, trips over a light and breaks something that we can't replace the next day. So tearing down is sort of a way to protect the set. So we spend the first day, and this cinematic director doesn't know what he's doing. And he wasted an entire day. Now, we did move in a lot of set props and that kind of stuff. But in the end, there was a call really late at night, about 10 o'clock at night. And the director's like, what do you think I should do? And he goes, well, you got to let that guy go. Nothing against him. He's a super nice guy, but he's just doesn't seem to understand how unfinished the set is and how much work we got to do to get this thing to be able to shoot. He's like, I think you're right. And so they clipped the guy. And then the next day we start, And it takes, you know, we're not allowed to go in at 6 o'clock in the morning. So we've got to pack up, shower, get out. And then we get in and it's starting to heat up bad. And now we have to figure out a way to put in, I don't know, 20 lights and hide them all behind obstacles. And so the place is just lit. We got to solve for the problem with the director who can't be behind the camera looking in his pedestrian clothes because this is this crazy sci-fi set. Kind of grungy sci-fi. So we put a lab hazmat suit on the guy, gave him these glowing test tubes so he could be pouring the stuff back and forth, and he has got goggles on so he can keep his eyes forward to watch the performance. But he's also got to kind of coordinate his hands at the same time, so he starts to pour and he can start looking forward, and then he's like, oh, yeah, you know. Doesn't really matter if he spills it, but he didn't. We also had some blocking in the shot where people are coming up and grabbing the Invisible Man and putting a syringe to the head. And we realized that when playing stuff back, that moving too close to a VR camera, the hands start splitting into pieces, start splitting into hemispheres. And so we had to say, okay, you're not going to shoot him and you're not going to do this in his head. You're going to do it in his neck, and you're going to have to turn your hand sideways so that it keeps your hand composited together. And solving problems, man, critical thinking. The reason why, and I sat and watched Richard Taylor just blaze through these problems, just like he had been there before at this exact problem. And what the real truth was that he has been a director for 35 years, 40 years, and he had solved these problems, way harder problems, a million times. And he was just eating this alive, man. So a big part of critical thinking is trying it. Making a regimen, because you learn so much that has nothing to do with the subject matter that you're actually trying to solve. You're getting that as well, but you are also learning the mechanism of how your brain solves problems. One of the things I noticed, and I mentioned this once before a long time ago, but I noticed this starting to happen I started noticing it in people when live chat started showing up on the internet. I know AOL had a long time ago, but I'm talking about chatting with your loved ones back and forth, or your friends or whatever. And I would type something into chat, trying to answer a question, and then I would get back this reply. What? In chat. Now, in a live conversation, I get someone going, oh, I wasn't paying attention, you talked too fast, you mumbled, whatever. And so I need to say what, because I don't understand, I didn't hear the word you said, or I wasn't hear the end of your sentence, the beginning of your sentence, whatever it was. But in chat, what do? You scroll up and you just reread it until you get it. And if there's something specific about what you said that was not clear, they should say, I don't understand. What do you mean by that? As opposed to what? Meaning every single thing you just said was so inconceivably mixed up. I'm just going to give you a blanket. And so I would sit there with people, I mean, all different types of people. And, you know, some people, I would be chatting at work with people getting, you know, $1 billion projects done, and everyone had no problem understanding what I'm saying. And then I go out to my friends and I'm dealing with like piddly squat crap, you know, where do you want to go for dinner? Well, you know, we ate barbecue last night. Let's do sushi tonight. What? So at that point, it started to reveal that we were losing, or they never had, any critical thinking whatsoever. Because the data set just went in one ear and out the other, right? But now let's think about it. Is critical thinking something that every human being will run into as a necessity in life? We'd like to think, yes. Of course. But I don't think that's the case anymore. And I think it has to do with the fact that society has started to coddle itself. Weird case in point. I come from Kansas. Well, we're not real rich in Kansas. Quite opposite, right? And so when it comes time to change the oil in your car, or at least back in the day, you did it yourself. You couldn't afford to pay $35 to have someone else just take a screw out of the bottom of your car, drain it, and put the screw back in and pour oil in the top. I mean, some absolutely brain dead thing. They try to juice it up with like, well, we clean it out and we do all this. We put a special suction thing. It's like, fuck you, dude. Really? It's taking a screw out. we're going to sell you a bolt that sticks in the bottom of your car. It's got this vacuum hose thing. I mean, it's all this bullshit, right? Okay. Fast forward 40 years. And now everybody goes and pays someone else to do this brain-dead job. I mean, hats off to the people who do it. No criticism of them. It's just a job. But the more that we relinquished those challenges into off-the-shelf things, and then the second stage of it is we didn't replenish that extra time that we give back to our life by using someone else's services with something else that might challenge our mind. We're always sold this bill of goods in the world of basically retirement. Even when you're young, well, take your car in and retire in the lobby and watch soap operas or organized news on the TV. We'll let you know when your car's done. That kind of thing, right? All right. Problem. You didn't use your brain. Every luxury that comes around, you stop using your brain. People want information. They just search it online. Well, there it is. Whether it's true or not, there it is. And it seems like 100% of people are completely good with whatever they read online. I mean, some of the stuff's super easy. What's that actor's name in that movie? Well, they're not going to lie to you, right? It's there. But something a little above that, because you challenge yourself a little bit. When I do 3D, for instance, there's always something that's like, oh, God, how do you do that? You know, even just using the interface. Well, I want to expand all the collapsed folders. I want to find an object that's hidden, but it's still in the render stack. You know, there's little hotkeys or something. Sometimes you can't find anything because there isn't anything. And some dude's like, push command alt 3 semicolon dash dash. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, it just did like 10 hours worth of work in 2 seconds. That could be nice. I think that the question to ask is, how important is it to think critically? Well, that's where we get to the last 14 months of existence. Oh boy, is it really important to think critically, isn't it? To stop just taking information they give you and believe it. I mean, it's been way more important than just last 14 months, but by gosh, you have seen complete absurdity at just a epic level of absurdity. Now, because they literally, mathematically, and algorithmically understand how stupid people are, it could be just as simple as you answer a dumb survey online that's giving away your security questions because a radio station's asking a survey. You don't know that DARPA is paying them to do that thing, or some other spy team from Russia is paying that radio station to ask you, what's your first concert? We'll pay you to poll, what's your first concert? That's a security question on a ton of interfaces. Okay, one down, right? They'll go to some pet store and say, what was the nickname of your first pet? That's another security question, but they're putting it through the paradigms where this information seems like it makes sense because it's Petco on one and it's K-Rock on the other. Getting that information out of you, and eventually walk right into your bank account, take all your money, and you don't even know how that happened. Seems legit too. They can VPN right to wherever neighborhood you live in because you identify where you live. They'll go right to your zip code, the VPN out, and the bank thinks it's you. Okay. So they find out you're not very smart, that you don't think, you have memory, no intelligence. And once they figure out they've got critical mass of this mechanism through luxury, again, it's the slow Turkish prison, man, they know algorithmically, they can calculate it, how much they can get a particular population in a particular area of the world to immediately go along with complete insanity. They know before they start the scam that they're going to get this X number percentage. And then the only game that's played is, can I get the rest? How much more do I have to do to get the rest? And okay, and then when it comes down to the rest that can't be converted, the game is to brand those who won't be converted as the enemy so that the other batch kills the first batch. Mm-mm. What's interesting is, I'm going to try to obscure this just a little bit. According to China Uncensored, a channel on YouTube, I think it's still on YouTube, He told the story of Mao Zedong in China. And he said that the landlords were the first people that were beheaded. It was the first wave of deaths. Now, with the last 14 months, anybody who needs to pay a bill is going to think anyone demanding the payment is in this condition, right? We've been told in many months that you're not allowed to do any work unless you are essential or you're working from home, which is leaving out a large percentage of the population. You need to drive somewhere and do something that maybe is not perceived as essential to the strategic resources of living, right? All right. So there's this weird thing going on that the banks don't have to acknowledge the last 14 months, which means they're going after the people that own your home. Then they have to ask their tenants to pay their rent. But there's the people that are causing the last 14 months telling the people that need to pay their rent that they can't kick anyone out of the house who can't pay it. Now, what should be going on is what happened in Italy, where the leadership over there told the banks, you can't ask for any money. You guys invent the stuff anyway from scratch. You're just going to have to chill on your payments. Find another way to exist. You already print money from scratch using fractional reserve systems. So chill out. So in America, that never happened. So the Treasury Secretary never put down a moratorium on the banks themselves, which would relieve the banks of perhaps financial obligations on their ends, right? Any payments they owe just get paused until this whole thing's over, thus relieving the landlords, who then can pass the savings down onto their tenants. So today, the landlords are all being bankrupt, and this company's coming through and buying all the homes in America, which is artificially driving up the price of homes. Sounds good if you're in a seller's market, but it spells pure death if you're the one that's holding the house, because all of your credit gets creamed, you have all these problems, and you lose the equity in your home. I mean, that is if you can't flip it quickly. Some neighborhoods sell homes very, very quickly. Other neighborhoods don't. I got a friend who's down here in Orange County. He sold a home before it went on the market for a great price. I got a friend who lives in Bel Air. He's had his house on the market for 6 months, couldn't sell it, took it off the market. Got a bunch of lowball offers that are probably $300,000 lower than what it's worth. Okay. So we're already starting to see this whole thing. This is all being empowered by a society that was already duped before this thing started. You see, I see this all the time in my area. So what's the most important generation that exists on planet Earth at any one point in time? The kids. The kids are the most important because they're going to grow up and take care of this place. So if they're under attack in any way, shape, or form, something's going wrong with our area of the world. Okay. So used to be when you went into public, when I was a kid, you learned how to behave. Oh, you can throw a few tantrums, then you're going to get your ass warmed up pretty good, and you're going to stop doing it. Happened every day in my little hometown, and every kid who had that happen a couple of times went always straightened up. There's no permanent damage to the children. It's just a little swat in the butt, and most of the time it's just disapproval, it's not really pain. And they learned how to behave, and then they became good people, and they met good people they got to marry and have kids with. Because they weren't a POS, they didn't marry a POS, right? And the kids that never got any discipline ended up being POSs and married POSs and created POSs, right? All right. What happens today? And I understand if you fall into this trap every once in a while, but I want you to think about it before we continue this kind of thing. I see all the time kids coming to restaurants they shouldn't be at because they're grown-up restaurants. Parents can't prioritize the kids. Well, we're not going to have kids stop us from going to like exotic sushi places when they're 2 and 3 years old and they don't want to eat raw, clammy fish. It's an adult curse to like sushi, right? Because it costs so much, but it tastes so good, right? So they line up the kids with all their telephones, iPads, they're making tons of noise in a otherwise, you know, nice restaurant. You know, some dude's over there spending $100 trying to get a girl to like him. And he has to listen to SpongeBob SquarePants while he's trying to say, I love you. You know, it's just crazy how these restaurants have no standards. But even the restaurants don't know. They bring the kids in, they hide that crap in a purse. But what's happening to those kids' brains? Instead of figuring out how to grow up and pay attention, of course, they shouldn't be at half these locations in the first place. No need to behave. Let me distract you with this. Let me distract you with this. Now, if you're putting your kids on those things and there's some type of educational game or something, I had really good success with educational software for my kid. She's very brilliant, so I assume that some of that stuff worked. Then that may actually be really cool. Learn math while mommy and daddy eat sushi. That's awesome. Probably doesn't make a hell of a lot of noise either. But when I was a kid, I mean, it was really strange that it was all about the growing up. It was about a rite of passage, even from your parents, even if they weren't putting it on point. It was all about learning how to behave more and more every single day, taking on more responsibilities every single day. I mean, I think some of our parents turned us into slaves, but in the end, it gave us really cool work ethics and just really, you're not afraid of anything because when you were a kid, your father said, you got to go do this. And you're like, I don't know how to do that. And you're like, well, that's why I'm making you do this, because you're going to learn. And you don't think you can, and then you do, and you're like, oh my God, this is awesome. And then when you're off on your own, guess what starts happening? You saw your dad's critical thinking when he told you to do this, and so now you're by yourself, and the juices start flowing, your adrenaline's flowing, you're like, man, I'm going to figure this out. Okay, good. Then there was this cultural change, and I have to say, I probably noticed it, I don't know when it started, but it was this, about late 80s, I think I started noticing it being said here in California. And it was all about trying to keep children young forever. Well, I don't think they should grow up too fast. Okay, well, yeah, I don't think that the 9-year-old should be going to the mining hole and working as a miner, literally digging coal out of the ground at 9 years old, you know, which they did back in America in the late 1800s. Yeah, I don't think that's probably a good idea. But what do you mean, keep them young forever? Certain parents will baby talk their kids clear into like their teenage years, man. And the kids baby talk back. Good friend of mine, he's no longer alive. He was my age, and he had this weird thing. His father treated him like a man, but his mom treated him like a baby. So he called his mom, mommy, and he called his dad, father. Why? Because that's what the different parents who were divorced required. So you have to grow up when he's with his father, and he was like a little baby with his mom. Total weird thing, man. Totally weird. My house was just mom and dad. That was it. Whether I was young or old, that's what it was. But there's been this cultural change. Keep kids young forever. Well, what does that do? Because critical thinking is not part of being a child. Critical thinking is your first rite of passage into probably your pre-adolescent teenage years. Well, there's a hard cutoff, isn't there? There's a point where your parents will say, you got to move out. But if you've been treated like a baby or some sort of subdued adulthood, then when you have to get out on your own, ladies, you guys have dated these, you ladies have dated these guys where they want you to do everything for them because they can't do anything for themselves. It's not even like the old traditional family where, hey, maybe you do like cooking and cleaning and he's going to take care of the car and the trash and everything else. These guys can't do anything. They can't change a flat tire. They couldn't change their oil if their life depended on it. And so you end up having to raise your husband. In my world, raising a girlfriend. It's happened several times in my lifetime. It gets tiring, you know? But what is the other thing that comes with, it's sort of the phrase or the action that happens to identify someone who doesn't have critical thinking. It will be a very quick version of I give up. I give up. Oh my God. Now, hey man, you can work forever trying to fix your vacuum cleaner without the manual of how the thing's put together. And you worked and you slaved and you tried to figure this damn thing out. And you do have to give up because you got to go do something else or go to bed. And the next day you'll have new eyes. You're like, oh God, I totally missed the spring. Oh yeah, I got to do this. That works better. Oh, that works good. You know, that's fine. But giving up is huge. We're always looking for the out to create the space to have supposedly this relaxation and a good time. When what's that do to you? What happens to a muscle if you don't use it? They call it atrophy, right? Okay, your brain atrophies too. Now, I want to reintroduce what I always say to you guys about how a neuron multiplies in your mind, in your brain cavity. Again, when you look at the normal cells in your body, look like little suitcases and they split in half and do mitosis, we can watch that in a microscope and go, wow, let's check that out. We just watched that thing duplicate. We know that works. What they weren't allowed to do or able to do was to stick a camera in your brain a long, long time ago and watch a neuron create itself. Because it doesn't just go, whoop, bam, there's a new one. So they kept saying they didn't think he got any new neurons. But then through black dye tests and terminally ill patients, they would black dye your brain, which would absorb into all of your neurons and brain cells and everything, your gray matter and all that. And then they'd eventually, you live a couple more years, and they'd autopsy your brain after you died. They'd find fresh, clean cells with no black dye in them, signifying cell growth. And they realized the oldest one I've heard, a 79-year-old man, had brand new cells. They told you you never got any new cells after the age of 10. Why did they say 10? Well, the silly thing is they should have picked the day that your skull stops growing, because they know that if you kept the little brain you had when you were a baby, even though we do have pretty big heads, and you look at the adult size head, they know that there has to be cell growth to fill up the cavity. Okay, so whatever that is for you, 15, 18, 20 years old, your head stops growing. There you go. Your neurons multiply due to electrical signal overload. The more that you use your neurons to think, to solve a problem, not just memory recall, okay? An electrical frequency will overwhelm the nucleus of a cell, a neurological cell, and it will eject part of its core, and then the other cells, including the origin cell, will make a coax to it and glue it all together, and you get another switch, a transistor in your chip called your brain. That's why my friends who keep working their entire life until the day they die are sharp as nails. The people that try to relax, the people who try to retire, well, the minute that they cease challenging their mind because their retirement is built out of nothing, well, they end up in dementia. They end up pretty physically healthy. They don't know who they are. They don't know what room they're in. They only have partial long-term memory. They might know who you are first one day and not know who you are the second day. It's bad news, man. Now, today there's a lot more to it related to the toxins that we consume. I would say, if you're interested in that, look up my episode on toxins at deepthoughtsradio.com. Click in the search field and type in the word toxin. And it'll refer to you a lot of stuff. So there's other chemical mechanisms we're using to pulverize our brains. One of them is this drink they want to give us. So that's a big one. And they know it. They know it has those side effects. Okay. Keep that in mind too. What we're talking about prior to that problem. The other one is this. How do you know when you're having critical thought? I mean, you're thinking all day about things. You are solving problems. Which ones are critical and which ones are just sort of autonomic, let's just say. Well, there's probably a lot of subtle gradients to this answer, but I will tell you that one is very definitive, and it has to do with the fact that one comes with a level of frustration. You might use the word difficult. Again, the example I gave at the beginning of the episode is very strategic. If you are solving problems super fast, it's good. It's a good thing. Definitely helping your brain out, but you're probably not quite overstimulating your neurons to produce any new ones. It's not the end of the world, okay? But I will tell you that on some sort of heartbeat in your life, you don't want every minute of your day to be this, because you'd rather probably die than to do this all day long. But it's fun to have a little challenge that presents a sort of comfortable level of frustration or challenge to make sure that you challenge yourself with something where you can't find those answers real easily. For me, it's 3D for sure. Absolutely. Sort of coming up with episodes. That's another one. But I go into something in 3D. I'm creating an object that I think I've created a million times, and I turn on the shaders and I start looking how the shadows are casting on this shape. Man, it's really weird in this one area. I look at the geometry. I do a few little quick fixes and nothing seemed to fix this thing. I'm like, damn it, I got to get rid of this weird thing where the bevel's not looking right. It's not shading. It's not casting light properly. And then I'll look around. Oh gosh, I got to add a supporting little line here and cut here. And then boom, it all of a sudden works. And then I try to take a moment to think about, okay, let's try to memorize what the hell you just did. What was it before and what is it after? Because we don't want to ever run into this particular problem again. And why is that? Because there's more challenges down the road that are bigger and better, that yield better results and more rewards further down the line. Now, there's this big thing about teaching creativity. And a lot of people are sort of on the fence. One group says, you can't learn creativity. You got to be born with it. Another group says, that's not true. I can teach someone creativity. Well, if you don't have a teacher around you, but you want to become creative, well, then what is that? That seems like it's almost like a weird paradox of, can I teach myself to be creative? I mean, don't you have to have somebody kind of mentoring you along the way? All I can say is it helps. It does help. But by no means is it necessary if you do critical thinking. Now, you remember when we talked about the initial definition, we talked about you have some data points out there. You have some objects. It's like a MacGyver thing. You got a paperclip, a rubber band, and a ball bearing, and you got to fix the nuclear bomb. You got to defuse the nuclear bomb. And so you're trying to figure out how this would all go together to make something happen, right? What starts happening with your mind, the more that you critically think, is that you'll start building a increased level of containers that you can perceive at any one second in time. Now, some of you are old enough to remember that the reason why they created a prefix of 3 digits and then a suffix of 4 digits for all phone numbers in the United States, area codes were barely ever discussed before pagers hit the deck. You have to ask a friend, what's the prefix for? I mean, what's the area code for New York? You know, someone would tell you. They picked 7 digits because they knew the brain could store 7 digits pretty easily. It just happens to be some geometry in the brain that works it out. But now, what if I told you that the more you solve any problem in life, and you have typically a data set of, say, 4 data points, aka variables, that comprise the solution for what you're trying to come up with? It could be way less. It doesn't matter. Let's say you get really used to 4. Then at some future point, without a notification in your telephone, you can all of a sudden handle 5, and then 6, and then 7. Some of you might go from 4 to 8. Well, here's where creativity starts to happen spontaneously. So you're sitting around, and you're thinking about what you could do in a particular situation. For instance, when I did the intro to the show, it was a lot of different choices. I mean, I had cameras. It's all virtual, so I can make 100 different cameras, 100 different shots. There's probably at least 6 shots of the intro that never were used. Didn't fit the music, didn't fit the narrative, slowed down the shoot. Just didn't look impressive. But what I'm trying to do is figure out the most dramatic scene. First time I shot the headlights turning on the pod before it starts to rotate, I realized that it was turning on in a room without any volumetric light in the room, meaning no mist. You couldn't see the beams of the lights coming out of the pod. Well, I had studied how to create that kind of what they call volumetric light. You know, it's the flashlight in the fog, right? And so you can see this nice beam of light. You see it all the time in shows, right? Especially Star Trek Enterprise. So I'm sitting there thinking about the problem, and the problem has X number of variables that I'm trying to use to solve the issue. I got a pod, I got a camera, and I got lights. That's 3 things. Maybe animation, 4th thing. I got lots of other sockets left that aren't even being used. So as I'm thinking about this problem, my brain goes, well, I got another socket over here. What about volumetric light? Oh yeah, volumetric light, that's cool. What about a backlight? You know, let's watch the movie again, see what the room really looks like again. oh yeah, there's this blue strip light that's sort of up above the pods hanging up there in the rafters. I got to put that thing in. Everything's making it more dramatic. I started rendering the frames. The frames look really flat because there was no contrast in the frames. There was no real dark darks and light lights. So I was like, oh man, I got to post-process this thing. Make sure it looks rich and just inviting. You want to be there. A little cartoony on a subatomic level and a little movie-ish on another level. There was a lot more things I wanted to do, but I was running out of time. This is where you can get a creative realm opened up in your brain. The more you train your brain to take on more and more variables to solve problems, the more you'll have spare sockets to apply to any one problem coming up in the future. When you enter life as a non-challenged person, for instance, when I would teach defensive driving to my friends when they would move from rural areas to the big city, one of the big things I tell people to become a fabulous driver is to keep inventory of all the cars that are driving around you. That's why you have to use your mirrors. You're introducing and subtracting. So that car that exited, you subtract that inventory from your mind. You're also looking inside the car to find out who's driving the car. You observe a car for a few seconds to figure out whether or not they're swerving on the road, driving slow, driving fast. You see a young kid who's 15, driving a little quick. Be careful, that kid's on a death wish. You see the student driver hanging on with 10 and 2. Well, they're going to be a little brittle. You don't want to get anywhere near them and freak them out because they're going to oversteer and kill people. So you're itemizing every single car and keeping it in your memory. From cars behind you, cars coming up on the side, and everybody in front of you. Once you do that, then you almost become a big machine learning computer yourself. You can predict, minus someone coming up 130 miles an hour or something, minus something crazy just introducing itself, which I also teach, right? Expect the unexpected. The big problem with big rigs is they block a lot of the cars in the inventory. So if someone in that other area, that blind spot, swerves in front of them, now you got a gigantic truck that can kill you, potentially coming into your lane. So I usually get around them and, you know, not quickly or anything, but just kind of keep my distance if I can, because they're death machines. The brakes also go out. And when they go out, they're just like missiles going through traffic, right? The more you understand the medium of your creativity, and it doesn't matter if it's math, woodworking, building guitars, trying to figure out how to put plants in your front area of your house or whatever it is, the more you understand the art of what you're doing, and the more sockets you open up in your brain by using your brain everywhere else, you'll just find that the universe comes up and goes, hey, what about this? What about that? What about this? They use all your empty sockets and they're just rotating the choices through like a video game of, hey, you want to wear this shirt? You want to wear that hat? How about this glasses? How about this style of nose and beard and shape and stuff, right? My concern is that we all know what critical thinking means on a fundamental level. The concern starts where, well, is anyone ever challenging themselves? Because it can be uncomfortable. Ask anybody in the gym. Like I always say, you lift weights to tear muscle. Okay, well, you lift weights until you go to your terminal point where it burns so bad you can't do another one. That's when you know you're worked out. And the second you drop the weights, the second you get up from your sit-ups, you get the adrenaline rush. Oh my God, and you feel like a new person. It's like a little mini energy drink. It's really strange. It's fabulous. It's just the way God designed the human body. We weren't meant to be sitting on our asses all day. We never were allowed to sit on our asses all day a long, long time ago. Move, move, move. Get shit done, you know? I was just having this conversation. I've had this conversation twice in 1 week, so I want to mention it with you guys. I've had two people ask me, what'd you think of the new Star Trek reboots by J.J. Abrams? And I said, unequivocally, they're crap. All three movies, utter crap. Third one, the worst ever. The Simon Pegg run. Just awful. But there was one scene in the Simon Pegg version that I thought was brilliant. It felt like an outside writer came in to clean up their mess. And it was when there's an alien. I won't ruin it for you because it's such a great movie. There's an alien that is being, he's created this super weapon And these Star Trek people are going, why are you making this weapon? Why do you want to hurt people in the universe? Why are you at war constantly? Like, what the fuck is wrong with your race, basically, right? And this dude, like, turns to them, and he's like this crazy lizard dude, man. And he says, it's one of my favorite actors from Pacific Rim. And he says, you know, we found out a long time ago, way before you humans ever crawled out of the sludge, that if we stopped warring, that we atrophy, basically. I'm paraphrasing, but we become weak. And because the universe and the galaxy is made out of a ton of aggressive races, that we have to stay strong at this phase in the galaxy because everyone's coming to take our stuff away, to genocide us out of existence, the Borg, you know, etc., right? And I'm sitting here listening to that, and I'm thinking, damn. It almost reminds me of the Natural-Born Killers in dialogue with Woody Harrelson, where he just lays out that dog that we're all basically feral animals and that we've only convinced ourselves that we're civilized. And, you know, wow, a lot of truth in that little Tarantino moment. But I started thinking about this dialogue from Star Trek III. And I thought, man, that is actually a morbid truth to the universe. That you do have to stay strong. As long as there's one scumbag on your planet that wants to rape and pillage and genocide people, unless you can get rid of that whole race of people, meaning like that clique, not necessarily a race, but like that clique of people out of the universe. Everyone has to stay strong and look over their shoulder to a point. You know, technology can help, obviously, stop these people. But because of religious doctrines and other made-up doctrines that the people who control the world introduce to make us hate each other and make us think that we're really don't want the same thing in the universe, which is peace for everybody sort of thing, this stuff continues. So how does that apply to critical thinking? It's metaphorically the same exact thing. In the Star Trek episode, it was all about war. Brutal, life and death war. With our minds, and the way that the world is working right now, there are some of us that think that there's a life and death choice to be made in 2021. We really believe that the data shows that this is a potentially super, super pivotal moment for anyone's future. And it's sort of got this, you know, kind of bummer side to it, which is even if you are the one that doesn't choose it, if all the people who did choose it disappear, what's left for the rest of us? Like, what's the next plan? But before you go to some macabre reality, which is easy to do, I understand. The real question is, how much can you improve your life, your personal life, by experiencing the joy of your capability? You know, we ask ourselves a lot in this life, once we reach a certain stage of enlightenment, why are we here? And I think most people get to a point where they say, well, we're obviously here to be tested. Don't disagree. What we're being tested on, well, that's always the blurry answer. We want to know, but we're not sure. I think one thing is probably certain, though, that the test is as three-dimensional as it could possibly be, meaning every metric of life that we can live can be the test. And I think the beautiful way that the universe has been designed for us is that we can actually elect to choose the various spectrums of the challenge. Some people think that building their body really big is their challenge. Some people can think building their mind is a huge challenge, their consciousness, their sensibilities about the universe. The answering that question, why are we here? Life, the universe, and everything, right? Which, of course, is 42. Here's where critical thinking, I think, becomes the huge paycheck for everybody. The more that your mind is capable of bringing on critical thought, the more that your challenges, let's just say, can be, or the spectrum of your challenges that you can choose for yourself, it keeps opening up and opening up and opening up. For instance, I think it is probably well understood that the more intelligent you are, not just smart, which means memorizing and repeating, but truly intelligent, there's pretty much nothing that you can't engage in, minus maybe your physical limitations, right? Like I always say, you probably can't be a 5-foot woman and go into the men's NFL and compete. That's okay. You could do things they can't do. But I think that the overall kind of offering to man is pretty even across the board. And what's interesting about it is people bring in the other critical theory and try to convince people that they are genetically inferior, is what they'll try to tell people through backhanded, sort of indirect ways to brainwash you while you don't even know that's happening. Thus breaking down your constitution to think that, well, they can do that, but I can't do that. It's like, okay, let's take away all race and make it all one race in the whole world. Okay. Well, let's leave in there financial inheritance. Well, we know there's families that are born rich. They just are. They just inherit a bunch of money. Perhaps in some cases, they inherit powered structures where they can control society, maybe a royal family or some banker family. Okay. But if you truly trace the lineage of that, any one of those families back, well, there's a broke-ass version of the family. You may have to go back several millennia for some of these families, but there's a broke-ass version of their great-great-great-great-great-grandfather or grandmother. Probably in this world, grandfather. And something happened. Someone hustled. Someone busted their ass. Someone made sacrifices. Maybe they stepped on heads to get ahead. In the end, they got ahead, and then they passed that virtue down, but they also had to teach the next generation to keep the money, keep the power structure. Because again, the way that my friends who grew up in very affluent areas of the world have, you know, they have a problem believing in any type of overall power structure in the world being controlled by families. They do, and there's a reason for that. Because they grew up with kids who were descendants of very, very wealthy, just industrial families. And they watched those kids turn into complete losers, drug addicts, or just never accomplished anything. They were in the Turkish prison for the rest of their life, given everything that they wanted and therefore never achieved any critical thought. And so they don't believe that there could be a cabal of families that could ever do such a thing. All right. So I let that come out and I go, okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, and then I go, what about the Rockefeller family? They did really well. What about the Rothschild family? They've done really well. What about the Windsor family? Saxe-Coburg family? What about all those families? Well, you know, let's look over there, squirrel. You know, we've seen this. Somehow families have it down pat, somehow. And, you know, there's a psychopathic element to that process, of course. There's a sort of kill empathy methodology they use. But we don't have to be them, do we? The reason why I'm mentioning this to you is that, one, you don't have to be evil. Two, you're just the first generation if you don't have all these things. But I will tell you, regardless of like the specific of being rich, you know, I know a lot of very unhappy, wealthy people. And it's because they never had to create or gain critical thought. And so by the time they figure out they're unhappy, their brain is not equipped. Their parents are dead or gone. And maybe their parents are exactly the same way. Maybe there's so much money in the family, no one's had to learn anything for 100 years. But their castles are paid for, blah, blah, blah. That would be a curse, man. I'm talking to my buddy last night, and he was talking about who's rich and who's poor in this world. And every example he gave was monetary. Money, 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 money. And I said, you know what? I think I think is the richest person in the world right now? Someone who knows not to take the drink. That's the richest person in the world right now. At this point. Critical thought gifted them with that rationale. Probably. Either that or they're really trusting someone else who had some critical thought. That's the richest kind of person. A person with great critical thought is the richest person? It's that old question. What would you rather have, all the knowledge in the world or all the money in the world? The fool takes the money. The genius takes the knowledge, because they know with knowledge they can have as much money as they want. There was a wise soul online for the last 4 years, and he said something very interesting. He says, you have more than you know. And I think that applies to us in life. We do have a tremendous amount of solutions for things that we simply don't perceive that we have. It's the old adage of Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. And I think that it's funny because we blow off these old movies. They're just entertainment. Sure, you know, you might get the lessons of the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion. You had it in you all the time. And those are still true statements as well. Well, what people don't realize is the wizard was saying the same exact thing to Dorothy. He was just saying it on point instead of metaphorically. What did he say to the straw man, right? Scarecrow. He said if he only had a brain, right? Well, he did all these brilliant things to save their lives, the whole journey. The Tin Man had a heart. He had empathy. He cried and rusted himself shut. The Lion, well, he eventually found his courage, didn't he? Especially right at the very end. So he proved to him, you guys have everything that you think you don't have. And the Dorothy's like, what about me, man? I know I got a brain, I got a heart, and I got courage. I just need to get home. He says, you see those red slippers? Bang them together. Boom. She's home. So imagine all these things in life where we think we need to buy stuff to get into the thing. You want to become a robotics engineer? Well, you probably got to get some books, learn about electronics. Then at some point, you need some components to put together a circuit. You want to become a painter? Well, you can study it for a while, but eventually you got to buy some paints and some canvas. Learn how to sketch, pencil and paper. Now you're thinking, man, I want to be really smart. I mean, not just smart, but intelligent. I want to be able to see things strategically before they happen, just like a chess game. You don't have to like chess. But you want that sensibility, right? And you suddenly realize that when you trick your brain into deciphering something, that you actually were born with every single thing that you need to gain that critical thought. You just had to have someone lay down the foundation for you. Bunch of people play Sudoku, right? Well, that's challenging, man, to figure out how to line up all the numbers and stuff, right? Try to find a project. That's my thing. Play a game that challenges you, something intellectual. Used to be that old game Mastermind, little pins. You know, those old games, man, they were so clever. The problem with, and I want to just throw something out there specific, is that there's a lot of these perceptions that like mobile games are really good for you. There are some out there that are good for your brain. The problem is that you can get pigeonholed into the mechanism. It's incomplete when it comes to the way life works. The other thing is a lot of these games need a lot of money to continue playing them. They don't design games anymore, really, where you can pay $5, you own the game, and you get 1,000 levels. There's some out there. But then again, the dimension by which they challenge you, is not wide enough. It's on a spectrum. When you start doing projects on your own, something, again, that is like very manual, very tangible in this world, or I would say, you know, 3D is a pretty good ass kicker. But regardless, you end up bringing in so many different flavors of the challenge that you learn a hell of a lot more about the world through learning a lot more about yourself. And again, the reason why they teach you algebra in school is not because you're ever going to use it in real life, but they do a real piss poor job, in my opinion, of sitting down the class and saying, the reason why we're teaching you algebra is very specific. It's going to teach you how to think. And they never lay out the benefits of what it's like to think. And so you go in this class totally confused. It's so esoteric that you're like, man, you know, I know I'm like 15, 14, 15 years old starting this stuff. And I know I haven't been around the world and I haven't launched a rocket all by myself, but like, where is this stuff going to be used? You know, no one has a grasp of aerospace usually by the age of 15. Maybe if you're a prodigy kid, you do. But that means you probably got a father or mother who's doing it and they're shoving it down your throat when you're 3 years old. Then you'll get it and you don't need any help from anybody. My dad sat me down in third grade, taught me the basics of algebra. Just the basics, man. An equal sign and the equation on one side, and the value on the other side, and how to deconstruct and simplify. And he did a really brilliant job, to be honest. It was something really simple. I remember the day him showing it to me, and he challenged me to, you know, solve a few little easy problems, and I did. And of course, I was getting some stuff wrong, and he was correcting me. The bummer was, is that there was a benefit, and there was kind of a bummer. The bummer was that when he was done, he was busy in life. He wasn't able to continue pushing me in that direction. Like if I went home to him every, you know, other day, and he would challenge me with something new, it would have helped out. But what he did do is he installed that different way of thinking for a third grader. You know, it's like I was just learning my like addition and subtraction, let alone my times tables. And all of a sudden I was doing A plus B equals C kind of stuff, right? But I think that turned on some circuits in my mind to see things a little differently. And so those situations you can induce as an adult. And again, it doesn't have to be math. Just be anything. There used to be these little wooden toys, and a lot of you folks that are probably 40 and over remember these, and those of you underneath that still have these in your house, God bless you. But there'd be like this wood plank, some square plank, and have some metal on it and some wood on it. Sometimes it's all metal, sometimes it's ball bearings. There are all kinds of cool little mind tricks, right? And it's a little thing where it's like, you need to get all these loops on the other side of this other loop. And this thing's in the way. But there's a clever way. Japanese love this, man. There's a clever way of like moving the little loops in a way and jostling it so this freedom happens and you can get all this stuff that looks impossible to be on the other side. There's that little trick that's going around the internet. It's been going around for 4 or 5 years. So probably an old bar trick. But you take a $20 bill and your currency and you take an empty bottle, it's all dry, and you turn it upside down, you put the nose of the bottle on the dollar bill and you challenge someone in the room. You can have the dollar bill, the $20 bill, if you can pull this $20 bill without tipping over the bottle. And of course, anyone who tries to pull it fast, pull it slow, the bottle falls over. And I saw one the other day where this awesome father, he probably knew how the trick worked, but he let his son win the game. And he put some type of currency underneath the bottle. It was a foreign currency, so I couldn't see what it was. And the father had to match that currency. It was like a bet. So it was two of those, whatever it was, dollar bills or whatever. And the father knowingly pulls it and knocks over the bottle because he wants his son to win. Great dad, man. And so the kid goes, sets it all back up again, and the kid starts bumping the table. Boom, 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 boom. And every bump, he pulls the dollar just a little bit more. And of course, the bottle's jumping in the air microscopically, and he's able to pull the dollar. And eventually, he does it 5 or 6 times, the dollar comes out, and he grabs his dad's money, and his money runs out the door. And his father then just kind of looks at probably the mother filming it or something. It was just great. The kid learned critical thinking in the middle of that trick. Kids who learn magic are typically pretty smart kids. Remember Johnny Carson? I don't know if you know his life story, but as a kid, he wanted to be a magician. So he learned a bunch of magic tricks, right? And what that did was that built up his intellect, his brain, so that when he needed to be the best talk show host on planet Earth, he got the job. And he had to juggle all those variables of, man, he had to do his monologue every single day, pick the jokes. He had to get an introduction to every guest that was coming through, figure out what the hell they're going to talk about. And of course, it all became autonomic after a while, just automatic, man. So that can be the same thing that we experience as well. So I think you feel me. This can be a really fun game, and you can start at any point in your life. In fact, it can be sort of the mechanism by which you dig out all those old or just one or two of the things that you kind of put off to the side. Things you're like, well, man, I've been working on this project for a long time, but it got hard. And life got hard too, so I put it off to the side because I need to focus on something else. Then life calms down, at least calms down enough. You can drag out that other stuff and go, okay, let's look at this with brand new eyes and let's get clever. And obviously, the more difficult it is, the people who have gone through this several times, they start getting aroused almost sexually inside their mind because they know something amazing could happen at any minute in the process. Very, very important. If you've been stuck in the Turkish prison, meaning you have done nothing more than to make your life comfortable 24/7. Obviously, from one perspective, there's nothing wrong with that. My caution to you is brace yourself for dementia at a minimum. Your brain will atrophy because it already is atrophying. The older you are, you might think teaching an old dog a new trick is impossible. It definitely can be more daunting. Some people are self-starters, some people aren't. Some people want help from other people as they're going through tough times, and other people are like, leave me alone, I'm going to figure this out. Whatever works for you, that's what you do. It'd probably be a good idea to tell people you're challenging yourself in case you get cranky. Probably be a good idea to tell someone, okay, I'm going to be doing this. You know a lot about this, but it's important that I learn this on my own. So please just let me struggle all by myself. I might come to you from time to time, but overall, I want this to be my experience, you know? You want to manage the situation is what I'm trying to tell you. So many times we change our lives and we go off to do these miraculous things. And there's usually two major mistakes we make. One, we don't tell anybody, and then we're in a weird state of mind at some point. We're not friendly. The other kiss of death is telling everybody what you're doing, which sets a bunch of expectations in your mind for them. I'm going to do this. Oh, really? Great. And then you're like, oh gosh, I don't want to do this anymore. Or it's taking a lot longer. And the longer it takes, the more you think you look like a horse's ass to people you brag to. And so wouldn't it be best just to kind of keep this to yourself? And you just say, I'm exploring this. Just kind of let them know you're interested in this. Set no expectations. Well, you know, I find that statements like, I don't really struggle with this anymore, but I have used the mechanism of like, if I'm telling someone about, well, you know, maybe I'm interested in this, maybe I'm not. I'm just kind of taking a peek right now. That way it's like I'm letting people know. That way, if someone has some information they want to share with me to make it a little bit easier, then we got it. And if not, no big deal. Yeah, you know, it wasn't really. I got into it, and when I realized what my full success might be in this particular thing I was interested in, it wasn't that interesting. Whatever. Be careful. Anyway, hope you dug that. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, it's never been more important to go bookmark that as we have changes going on. It has audio, video, social media, which includes a bunch of new things. I mean, we've got Odyssey now, which I just love Odyssey. Rumble is at 520 right now, so it's going to be continuing to put up new videos. It's really amazing, and there's an app on your TV. Fantastic. But there's also an app on your phone for Odyssey as well. Odyssee.com. Social media is pretty much Facebook and, well, actually, there's a bunch. Excuse me. Locked Facebook group, which is really well developed. If you're interested in that, you have a Facebook account. You haven't closed yet. Twitter, I just have random nights where I post a lot of stuff and weeks I don't post anything at all. But we have all the other ones. Gab, Minds.com, Getter. I got this spider asleep. Doing little maneuvers here. But there's a whole bunch out there, so get a look at that. We have all new remastered season one, a store with some brand new shirts, some funny shirts starting to sell, so appreciate that. The profit margins are crap on those shirts, just so you know, for me. So I know you might look at this. They're in the $20 realm for a shirt. Now, I've bought several, so the quality is really, really high. I kind of backed off of trying to create like 1,000 different variations. And I've also created a page on our website that is clearly showing you the choices of the new shirts. So when you click the store button now, it doesn't send you to the store directly. It sends you to a nice page that shows you the shirts. Then you click what design, you know, front plate you want. And then when you get to the store, you're going to see all the options of all the other designs that you can get, whether you want a hoodie or a t-shirt or something like that. And so all that helps out quite a bit. So I appreciate you guys. To those of you come in through Patreon and PayPal, I want to explain Patreon people get a whole list of fireside chats that you guys don't get without it. But you also get the episodes about 12 hours before everyone else. We are live again. The only thing I've noticed is that encoding is taking a tremendous amount of time. I don't know if that's something they set. I can't imagine I've ever been on a high priority, so I tend to think it's not something. We are definitely having our subscriptions altered algorithmically. I now can prove that in a court of law at this point. But what are you going to do, right? Was it 230 protection is got to be removed before any of that's going to change. But we already have 84 subscribers on Odyssey in about a week. So that's pretty amazing. Super fast engine on that. Super fast engine playback on Rumble. BitChute is using a distributed computer methodology. So it's a little bit slow when you push the play button. But there, every single video that I've ever put on this channel is on BitChute. It's the only alternate that has every episode. But deepthoughtsradio.com is your friend. Just use the search field. As I've been migrating things to Rumble, I just use my own website to copy and paste the titles and descriptions over. And it's really snappy right now, so I'm pretty happy. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.